All right, let's reconvene. We're moving to paper number seven, which is the draft interpretation on foreign exchange rates. Who's going to run this? Michelle?
I am.
Okay.
Good afternoon. We would like to discuss the feedback that's been received on the draft interpretation foreign currency transactions and advanced consideration that the committee published in October, and the papers are set out at agenda paper 7. So we will provide an overview of the feedback we've received at agenda paper 7A before we start discussing some of the technical issues at agenda paper 7B. I just wanted to raise one point before we started the discussions, and that is generally the feedback to the interpretation is positive, and the interpretation itself is quite short. So a lot of the comments that we've received are not that significant, and so we've tried to come up with a way that we allow the committee to discuss things in a simple way and focus on just the key points rather than a lot of the clarifications that have been asked for. So with that in mind, I'll hand over to Sam.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Agenda paper 7A sets out a summary of the feedback received in response to the draft interpretation. There was the 45 comment letter received in total. Overall, there is a support, as Michelle mentioned. There are overall support for the proposal in the draft interpretation. However, about half of the respondents identify area of the draft interpretation that they think could be improved. Almost all respondents support the proposed scope of the draft interpretation. The main issue that arose is the distinction between the monetary and non-monetary items. Similarly, nearly all respondents support the proposed consensus of the draft interpretation. Those supporting the consensus think that it provides an appropriate interpretation of IAS 21 and will help to reduce diversity in practice. Some respondents asked for additional illustrative examples, including an example of a transaction with a significant financing component. In relation to transition requirements, the majority of the respondents support the proposal to allow prospective application and agree that retrospective transition might place a considerable burden on some entities. However, some respondents did not agree with the providing two start dates for prospective application. They believe that a single date should be specified for prospective application in order to enhance comparability between entities. Finally, two respondents questioned not providing relief to the first-time adopters. These respondents raised a concern that the burden of applying the draft interpretation may be significantly different between existing IFRS adopters and their first-time adopters. So finally, does the interpretation committee have any comments or question on the matters set out in this paper?
So this paper is just a list.
Yeah, just summary.
We're getting to the analysis in the next paper.
Yeah.
Okay. Comments on this paper, or shall we go straight to 7B?
Martin?
Yeah, I'm sure whether we should address this under this paper, under general remarks, or under questions on the next paper. But over the headline, meaning of paragraph 5B, I'm a little bit confused because we talk about foreign currency transaction and advance consideration, and the example we discuss here is goodwill, and goodwill is not something which is more or less a single transaction which I could have which ends up in goodwill. In general, I have to have a business combination or something like that. So I have to acquire a bundle of assets. I'm a little bit confused that I could have an advance payment on goodwill.
And I think that's That was the example that we've picked up. I mean, I think what respondents were saying was they were a little bit confused as to what this paragraph was doing, but the paragraph was inserted to say where the related asset or liability, so not the advance consideration, that the asset that you recognise or liability you recognise after you've recognised the advance consideration is measured by reference to fair value, then this paragraph comes in to play. And so goodwill isn't goodwill itself is the residual value in the transaction. Yeah. It's not measured by reference to the advance consideration that you could pay in a business combination. So that's why it's an example. But it is something that we've raised in this paper and something that we think we need to address in drafting and clarify.
Yeah, but couldn't we find any other example than goodwill?
Well,
because
I believe
other example would be much better than just reflecting on goodwill, because goodwill, I guess, it's more or less an exception.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We'll try and find an alternative
example. So that's only my point.
Yeah, we'll try and find an alternative example.
I would tend to agree with that. I think it's a... Goodwill is, we have trouble defining what it is. So. Okay.
Okay, so
7B.
Agenda papers 7B sets out some of the analysis of some of the comments relate that are raised in the paper 7A. We'll discuss it in three sections if that's okay with the committee. If we go through the comments that are raised on scope, then the consensus, and then some we will discuss transition and first time adoption. In relation to scope, as we said, it was generally supported, and the main issue that arose was the definition of monetary and non-monetary items. And in considering the comments from respondents, we've identified a number of references in IFRS standards and in the conceptual framework that we think are helpful to assisting an entity to determine whether an item is monetary or non-monetary. However, we agree with the committee's decisions when it developed the draft interpretation that we should not add in this interpretation further descriptions of the definition of a non-monetary item. However, that said, we think it would be useful if the basis of conclusions to the interpretation acknowledged that an entity needs to apply judgment when determining if an item is non-monetary. We also think that some of the confusion has been caused by some of the wording in the illustrated examples 2 and 4, and we would propose to try and redraft some of that wording. So that was the main point in relation to scope. There were two other points. One point Martin's already raised, which was paragraph 5B, and there was also some discussion about income tax and insurance contracts, where respondents questioned the proposed optional application of these items. However, we've considered the comments and we agree with the proposals in the interpretation that it is best to leave these items as not requiring application, because this avoids any unintended consequences in these two areas. So if we turn to page 9 of agenda paper 7B, at the bottom of page 9 are the questions for the interpretations committee.
Okay, do you want to take these A, B, and C in sequence? So first, the question about the definition of monetary and non-monetary, and specifically not to expand that. General agreement? Okay. And B, to acknowledge in the basis that making that determination is based on facts and circumstances. Obviously, I guess. Tony?
No, I was going to agree with the last suggestion, that's fine.
And finally, the scope exclusions, insurance and income taxes. Okay. You're on a roll.
Okay, thank you very much. So if we turn to the consensus then, one of the significant points that Sung Woo mentioned was transactions with financing components. And the Interpretations Committee did discuss this matter when it was developing the draft interpretation, but at that point it didn't think it was appropriate to add an illustrative example, although it did consider an illustrative example in the paper. We've reflected on the number of respondents who have asked for an illustrative example, and we think that somehow we should provide that example given the number of respondents calling for the example. There were two other issues on the consensus. One was in relation to different amounts of revenue being recognised due to the timing of payments. So this is because if you receive advance consideration in a foreign currency, you'll be translating it at the date that you receive the foreign currency. We've considered the point raised. However, we think that this is because in the example that the respondents raised, actually the contracts have got slightly different risk profiles, and that it's a function of those risk profiles that you get different amounts of revenue. The other point in relation to the consensus that was raised was in relation to IFRS 15, where an entity is required to recognise a contractual liability when the consideration is unconditional. We agree with the point that the respondent is making, that actually between the date of recognising the unconditional consideration and receipt of that consideration, the entity remains exposed to foreign exchange risk. However, we think that actually the accounting is quite clear, and that we just need to acknowledge this point in the basis of conclusions. Those are the significant points in relation to the consensus that we wish to bring to your attention. Question two is set out at the top of page 13, and it asks the committee if you agree with our recommendations to address the transactions with significant financing within the illustrative examples accompanying the interpretation.
Martin?
My question is how to address it, because I guess we discussed already several times that the reason for advance payments could be widespread, could be for strategic reasons, to ensure later delivery. And I believe one needs a very, say, narrow fact pattern or so, really, to end up then with a clear guidance what is financing then, or when do I arrive at a financing component. And I guess this is challenging. So my question is, what was the intention, how to do it, or is it just the posting logic, or...
I think we would really show the posting logic.
Oh, it's only if it's
because
only
we
the
would
posting
have to
logic,
say
then,
it already complies
yeah, okay.
with IFRS
yeah,
15.
Not, yeah.
We wouldn't interpret
okay.
IFRS 15.
Then, yeah.
So we're just bookkeeping.
Yeah, it would literally be debits and credits, and not be all that.
Okay, we'll go with Bruce and just work our way around.
I was just going to say I agreed with the proposal. I think, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I like worked examples, so I think it makes it clear if we can illustrate it, definitely.
I guess I had the same question as Martin. My assumption was that we were going to put something interpretive regarding when there is a significant financing component, which I was going to be good, which I was in disagreement with.
In accordance with IFRS 15.
but I think what you're saying is, if it is determined in accordance with IFRS 15, there is a significant financing component. Here are the debits and credits as to how that would work,
yeah.
Which I don't disagree with. So as long as the example, I think, is clear that it's not implying an interpretation of how to determine whether or not there is a significant financing component, which if there is an example, that is a risk, because people will read into the example and say, well, if the example is saying there is a significant financing component, then by default, this must be how I interpret it.
Absolutely.
Tony?
I was going to make exactly the same point. I think the key to this is not explaining why there is a significant financing component, just saying that there is. Because as soon as you say why, you'll be drifting into interpreting IFRS 15.
Kel?
Yes, I realized that there was a lot of positive comments to this interpretation, even if I was not that positive. And I noted that Mazar did actually have this, that it is of limited use if you do not include also presentation in the income statement. And I also noted that there were some here saying that this would also be a presentation issue in the balance sheet. also the comment about the actual cash flow, and that is, I think, what I tried to make the point from the beginning, that is the actual cash flow and the currency exposure that impacts the results and so on. That is the critical issue here. But yeah, in general, I see that all the comments are very positive still. But there are some improvements in my mind still. Okay.
John?
I mean, I have some concern about extending it into an illustrative example of the significant financing component. I mean, we have been pretty careful in this interpretation not to try and get into issues of IFRS 15. And I suspect that there are many other aspects of IFRS 15 that we could look to illustrate here how it interacts with it as well. So my preference would be not to go anywhere near any illustrative examples of significant financing component, because and just leave it as is.
Henry, question for you: is there already an example in 15 of how to bookkeep a significant finance component?
I think so. Yes. Yeah, I think there is. I think there is an example of a an advance payment in the illustrative examples. Double check. I mean, I thought that so long as the case facts were carefully done, and it was made absolutely clear that it is just being decided that there is a significant financing component, there wasn't a huge risk of having an illustrative example. That said, people do read illustrative examples for clues that perhaps are never intended to be given, so there is always some risk associated with an illustrative example.
And maybe if it's helpful just to, I don't know, to John's point as well, is that I think I'm thinking about this, I think maybe like your discussions before, we didn't think there was anything necessarily special or difficult about, you know, applying this foreign currency piece to something.
I mean, is it clear that it's a foreign currency financing or a local currency financing?
No, it's not in the, it's just local currency. So it's just an illustration of the...
But that question would arise in the context of an advance payment in a foreign currency, would it? As to what sort of financing? I mean, obviously, in a significant financing component, there's issues about what currency is the financing in. So obviously, doing an example on a significant financing component under IAS 21, you're going to be interpreting what currency that financing is deemed to be in.
Philippe?
No, I'm venturing to proposing a solution which is, without giving any specific example, saying that the assessment of whether or not there is a significant financing component should take into account all facts and circumstances, including the interest rates which are prevailing in that foreign currency which we are dealing with. Because if I deal with a Swiss franc transaction, probably my assessment of a significant financing component will be quite different from Brazil or some other jurisdictions. And that's it. It depends its facts on based on those currencies and the interest rates prevailing in those markets. That's it. And without being more specific.
Okay, I'm hearing general support for including something. Tony?
I was only going to ask, what is it, and I can't remember from looking at the comment letters, what is it that people are troubled with? Is it what's the interest rate to use, or is it do I just accrete on the basis of the number I've put on the books in local currency? I'm just trying.
I think it's the latter point that you've raised there.
So could we, rather than a worked example, make a statement? Because the bookkeeping follows.
Yeah.
If you conclude that this has now become a local currency, functional currency item, mm-hmm. if that's the conclusion, then the rest of the bookkeeping follows from it without having to do any arithmetic. Hmm. A thought as you balance out what's the best way of answering the question that people have.
Yeah.
If
we could look at, you know, various options, and we need to come back to the July meeting and include it in the paper.
We're coming back to July anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll revisit this in July, but my concern is any illustration that didn't drift into the whether as opposed to the how is going to be fraught with difficulty, and something that just illustrates the how is going to be so anodyne as to be of questionable use. All right, Michelle, press on.
Transition
that. Yes, the step analysis of transitional requirements starts at the paragraph 48 of the agenda paper 7B. As noted, the majority of respondents support the proposal in the draft interpretation for transition. In particular, the respondents support the providing the relief from full retrospective application. The draft interpretation proposed three possible application dates, two dates for prospective application, and one date for retrospective application. The two dates for prospective applications are the beginning of the reporting period of initial application and the beginning of a prior reporting presented as a comparative information. Each option has its own advantage. However, the respondents noted that permitting three options on transition at the same time has the potential to decrease comparability between entities, and finally to increase complexity. The staff recommends removing the option for application beginning of the prior reporting presented as a comparative information, that is a paragraph A to B2 from the interpretation. This is because we agree with the committee's view, previous view in developing the draft interpretation, that it is important to recognize the interplay between this interpretation and IFR 15. Retaining paragraph A to B1 recognize this interplay and still provides relief from full retrospective application. And also, two respondents raised concern that the burden of applying the interpretation may significantly differ between existing IFRS adopters and first-time adopters. The draft interpretation did not propose to provide first-time adopters with transition relief. Having considered the view from respondents, we think that providing relief to the first-time adopter is of marginal benefit, as the adopter has to comply with the recognition and measurement requirements of other standards prior to considering IAS 21. Consequently, we do not recommend transitional relief for a first-time adopter. So our question is, does the interpretations committee agree with the step recommendation? First one is to remove the option to apply the prospective transition approach in paragraph A to B2 of the draft interpretation, and second one, not to provide transitional relief for first-time adopters of tenders.
Yeah, for those of us who are visual learners, it might be useful to refer to the drawing at paragraph 55. So essentially, you're proposing that we not have an option for prospective as of the opening date of comparable period.
Yes, B2, B2.
But to keep the other choice.
Yes.
Comments? John?
I would be in favor of retaining the prospective from the beginning of the comparative period just to improve comparability between the periods. I don't see that it's a big issue whether you permit that versus not. So it seems to me that if someone was inclined to do it from the beginning of the comparative period, that's actually improving their financial reporting, and I don't see why we would not permit that to be done.
Mikhail?
I agree as well. I mean, it must be more important that the comparative year is better quality in the reporting entity, and then that the comparative year is comparable with other companies. So I think that the A to B2 is a good solution.
But you'd keep all three?
Keep all three, yes.
Yeah. Tony?
I support what the staff have got to. I just think it adds another layer of complexity and difference between what companies will be doing. I just think, in the end, I think three transition options is too many, so I support where the staff has got to. I wondered a little bit about no relief for first-time adopters. The papers we talked about before and the exposure draft talk about having an option to measure assets at fair value. It's actually having an option to measure some assets at fair value rather than assets. And so, for example, inventory, intangible assets, which there isn't an active market, can't be measured at fair value. You wouldn't fair value deferred revenue or whatever it is we're going to call it on first-time adoption. And so I guess I'd probably be inclined to give first-time adopters the same break that we're going to give everybody else.
Young Su?
I just want to say I support the staff conclusion. I think that the interpretation should be consistent with the standard, and here the standard is IFRS 15. Since IFRS 15 is offering only two options for the presentation, in order to be consistent with the standard IFRS 15, interpretation should also offer only two options instead of three, not to create any confusions to the users.
Just to clarify, though, our scope is beyond just IFRS 15, is that correct?
Yes.
So if you had an advance payment for a fixed asset purchase, you'd be in the same spot.
Bruce?
Actually, my comment was similar to what you've just said. This isn't just restricted to IFRS 15. I supported all three. I would have left it as is.
If you have all three, what additional would you be giving to first-time adopters? Question for the staff. What additional benefit is there potentially in IFRS 1 that isn't captured at least by A2B2?
None of this would apply to IFRS 1 unless it's
Yeah.
Okay. So we need, that's it, we just need a specific reference.
Well, if we want to give
a reference. If we want to.
Yeah.
Philippe?
Maybe a side issue, not exactly on that one, but someone raised the question, to which kind of transaction does this apply? So if I am still applying IS 18 until the very last day of the permission, i.e. 2 years more, can I apply this interpretation to transactions which are in foreign currency as of today under the IS 18 and combined with that interpretation? I mean, will the interpretation refer specifically to IFRS 15 only, or would it say it could also be applied in the context of IS 18?
I think we just said it can apply to anything.
Okay, that's fine. Because it's about the drafting of the cross-index or cross-reference for IFRS 15 or IFRS 15 and other applicable standards.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just the basis we'll talk about part of the, you know, the kind of why you've got to the decisions on transition links to thinking about transition on IFRS 15, but the requirements wouldn't necessarily.
So the effective date, it will be immediately after publication, right? As usual with interpretations.
Yep.
So it means it can be applied immediately before applying IFRS 15 to revenue transactions under IS 18, right?
Yeah, I think if you're doing a conversion to from IS 18 to IS 15, first of all, you'd have to rework the amount of advance consideration you've got under IS 15, and then you would go to this interpretation to work out the rate. So I think 15 comes first. I think that it's right that we have the interplay between the two.
I may have transactions for which my analysis of the accounting for the transactions would be the same under IS 18 as they would be under IFRS 15, right?
Yeah.
IFRS 15 might not change the way I account for certain prepayments. So, and I can be faced with a foreign currency issue for those transactions at the moment. I'd have the same question under 18 as I would have under 15. So,
yeah.
I see no reason why we should prevent people from applying. Okay, that's fine.
No.
Tony?
But all I was going to say is, I think once this is released, you could apply it under any standard you're applying. You don't have to wait until IFRS 15 comes along.
I guess that was going to be my point. Yeah. You don't.
That's right.
You don't have to be thinking about 15 before you do this, John.
I was going to make. Well, it was just the same point. It's not an interpretation of IFRS 15. It's an interpretation of IAS 21, which applies interacts with multiple other standards.
Okay. I heard views on both sides. How many favor retaining all three options?
One, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay. Let me rephrase because that's a close vote. How many would object to retaining all three options? One. Okay. Now, the first time adopters question. Our experience has been, and that's why we said we had to explicitly consider first time adopters every time we had transition to deal with. That the problems of first-time adopters sometimes appear in strange and unusual ways that we hadn't thought about. To the staff, is Tony correct that in order to avail first-time adopters of the transition methods, all we need to do is to say, you're included? Is that correct, or do we need to do more?
What you need, we need to write to a consequential amendment to IFRS 1 to allow them to apply the transition requirements.
It has been done before because.
Oh, it's not unusual.
Yeah, because we did it on the mining one, the stripping cost. Yeah.
So we actually don't even need. Well, does that consequential amendment come out of an interpretation, or does it come as a separate issue for the board? I think it's a separate issue for the board.
I think we'd have to have a board vote. I don't know the complete due process procedures, but if we're amending a standard, we would probably need board permission.
I'm sure we could do it at the same time as
the board.
Well, we'd do the same discussion with the board, certainly. How many would favor making an exception in first-time adopters for this one?
Nine.
Okay, we will. We'll take that to the board. Okay.
Okay, so the last item in the agenda paper 7B relates to the terminology. And I know the committee has discussed the terminology before, but we would like to try and redraft the interpretation using a liability from the receipt of advance consideration or an asset from payment of advance consideration rather than the term deferred income and prepayment asset.
I'm told the concepts team was especially
outspoken. Not I think it would be true to say the concepts team have strong principles about this.
Comments?
Okay, well, we'll
that's what we'll do.
We'll have a go then and drafting it in that way. Finally, we set out in Appendix A of the paper the less significant points and how we plan to address those. I wonder if the committee has any comments or if it's happy to go with the staff recommendation.
Tony?
I have a specific comment that probably doesn't come through entirely in the additional items, which is that I remain troubled by Example 4, which I think interprets IFRS 15.
And I think we have said between Examples 2 and Examples 4, we would try and, I think the phrase I'd like to use is streamline the language.
I'd
Because I think you're right. I mean, I think there were a number of comment letters raised that, and it's not that we don't intend to look at it. We thought it was something we could really look at in drafting.
We mentioned it under monetary, non-monetary items. So, yeah.
Bonnie?
I was just curious when the next, there are two discussions that indicate there'll be, at a future meeting, the cost versus benefit and embedded derivatives.
So we will bring those to the July meeting.
July meeting,
with the effective date, because I think we've got some feedback on those items now.
Okay, so in July we can expect to discuss that next?
Yes.
Okay. Put a ribbon on it in July. And that at that point I will ask for a vote of the whole committee. Or a vote of every committee member on whether we should proceed or not. Martin?
Yeah, also probably then I've also a hint for the July meeting, which is the interaction with hedge accounting and with FIFO or weighted average evaluation method. Because in the example 4, it is assumed that the prepayment more or less is for the first product sold, so to say.
But yeah. I think that comes into the redrafting of example 4, because a number of respondents raised that point, and it should have said, I think, example 4.